Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for joining us for this FX Podcast. I'm Jeff Huser on a roof in downtown Los Angeles.
Notice how we blocked you in so you can't get out? You know, like you're going to have to run the gauntlet.
And by that sound, we're also simulcasting the FX PhD this week on the web.
Are we recording already?
We are using more bandwidth than we should be allowed to
use. Yes, exactly. So actually, we're here at SeaGraph in Los Angeles, and we are recording on a rooftop in an interesting neighborhood in Los Angeles, and this is the FX PhD bar camp here at SeaGraph.
You have a propensity for taking me to places where my livelihood is considerably at risk after dark, and not only that, but certain parts of my body are
threatened. I like living on the edge a bit.
That's true.
It's fine between the hours of 9 a.m. and 8
10 o'clock in the morning. For that half an hour, it's pretty good, really, because most of the crack whores are asleep.
And that's the reason we are ending this at 8 p.m. before it's dark, so we can find people.
But it is beautiful.
We
have a good
sunset. It is sunsetting. It is very L.A. here. And if you're hearing a lot of noise in the background, that is the FX... How can I put
generator?
This?
Generator?
Freeloaders? No, fans. No.
Fans.
Friends of. Say hello, everybody. So as you can hear, there are two or three people here, and they're having a good time, we hope. You having a good time?
Yeah!
Okay, now if this microphone didn't pick that up, they did say yes.
It was fine.
Okay, good. So, John, what are we doing here in Sunsetty, L.A.?
The bar camp, the idea behind bar camp? Well, the idea behind bar camp, we've invited members of FX PhD here to regale us with fascinating stories that they've seen either on the show floor or in a conference session or even maybe a tour facility here in town when they're around.
So let's start with what we've found interesting here at SeaGraph. And I guess what's your general impression of SeaGraph this year compared to San Diego last year?
That was fantastic. I mean, from my standpoint, SeaGraph is kind of the key show that I go to. If I had to pick a show each year, I generally go to NAB, SeaGraph, IBC. Once again, when I come here, you get inspired. The people you talk to, the art that you see, the technology that you see. I mean, I love it.
So I was just going to say, I think it sucks that they got rid of the electronic cinema.
I will agree with you regarding that.
I'm being controversial.
Why did they do that? I mean, you have something that works brilliantly.
You know,
it's something that people show up to check out. They sell out. It's impossible to get into.
Last year's was magnificent. But here's the thing, right? The electronic theater for me is more than just something that I'm missing. It is the birth of, like, Pixar, right? In the first years, they would bring their films to get it. If you got in the electronic theater, that was the benchmark of where we were as an industry. And people all over the world used to get the DVDs to kind of look at the state of the art. I'm mortified.
I wonder if that something has to do with SeaGraph is an organization, right? It's run by committees and so forth. It's like, I wonder if, like, you get lost in that kind of decision-making. Or something like
well,
that.
Well, I think they want to make it more like a film decision, festival, right?
It also had to cost a lot of money, the preparation that went into that. Plus, nowadays,
it's got to be the easiest thing to get a sponsor for, right?
Well, that's true. Plus, but you also have to project film, stereo film, or probably digital now, all digital. I mean, it's a big setup. I heard there's a lot of projection going on at the Nokia Theater, though. They're doing a lot of screenings over there, like, all day.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just the event of going to the electronic theater, seeing what made the cut.
I mean, this is my work is hard. And it's just like, you know, stuff is hard and it costs money. This is one of the greatest things about SeaGraph, you're right. And it seems like it's gone.
I may be jaded. Yeah, I edited it for a few years.
What's that?
I edited it for a few years, so I'm kind of jaded. It was kind of like, ah!
Fair enough.
Are you edited the electronic theater?
A couple years, yeah.
How cool.
Years ago.
Because it was out of Chicago, right?
Yeah, it was in Chicago. So.
Cool. So so this is L.A., which is obviously a good town for SeaGraph in terms of attendance. But I think what's also good, and I would just challenge you on that being one of the best parts of SeaGraph, because for me, the best part of SeaGraph is the fact that people share. Do you know what I mean? Like, you actually get Pixar or Sony Imageworks or whatever actually coming and saying, this is how we did it, because the community knowing how we did it and furthering the art is more important than me keeping it proprietary. And I think that for me is like, I've always thought SeaGraph had a kind of nobler.
Yeah, no angle. Challenging for me on that one, because like I said, it's one of the best, and it is. It's like, you're totally right. It's like, it's one of the reasons actually we like doing Effects Guide. I guess that's why we like, you know, it's like sharing information. So forth. That's
totally.
One of the great things that people are open and willing. And these aren't just nobodies. I mean, it's the heavy hitters, the show that we went to on Monday. Rob Bredow, John Knoll.
Yeah, John Dykstra.
Dykstra.
I mean, it was amazing, yeah. The Pixar, I mean, there's just like a whole lot of people discussing the great failures in production, which I thought was extraordinary. And being able to fess up with what didn't work is just about as important as fessing up with what did work.
Wait, we got a big group of people.
Since we have an audio class, I have to apologize. It's not a helicopter landing on the roof. The air conditioner just kicked in and you're hearing
it. Yeah, but you know,
it's made up for
by the ambience of having all our friends here.
I know. But the audio professor was here and I was...
This is actually my mum. I didn't know if you know this. Hi, mum.
Hi.
Okay, see? So, I mean, what's the advantage of having your mum here? Like aircraft's more price to pay.
We need to put some of these people on the spot, I think.
I think so.
Does anyone want to share something cool that they saw?
So you have just seen something at the show. There we go.
And tell us your name. Actually, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Cameron O'Rourke. This is my first SIGGRAPH. And, you know, just a couple light comments. It's just that, you know, even on the first day, I just noticed that the community and the show is just a really cool vibe. Very cool community of folks willing to share all kinds of info. You know, I go up, talk to anybody, and they'll tell you anything. And that's just been just really awesome compared to other shows. The other thing that I've noticed is there doesn't seem to be a lot of money in this industry. And, you know, I think, you know, looking at folks, you know, they're looking at all the products and everything, and all that has to come out of visual effects budgets, you know, and not the production budget. And me being a producer, I'm looking at this thinking, you know, we need to figure out how to change that, you know, so more money is flowing down to the folks doing the work.
Here on that one, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there really is a big issue with the role of visual effects, how much it contributes to the look of the film, and actually how much it can make a film open. There are several films that really the best thing about them were the visual effects, and yet, you know, I don't know that the visual effects community is old enough to wield the kind of power that I think that they should. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And that is the voice of?
Mike Scott, also known as Dorkman.
Also known as my mum in this particular podcast.
Yeah, I was realizing I should have said something more like hello or something to make it sound a little bit more accurate. But
would you agree with that about the role of visual effects? Do you think it's got the kind of respect that it deserves?
Oh, no, definitely not yet. I mean, like you were saying, a lot of movies are made by the visual effects, and I think people are... Still looking at it as almost like craft services or something. You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, this didn't work, go talk to them. Like, and just, you know, people don't really appreciate how much a movie is made in the post-production, especially now. I mean, you know, people market films with the visual effects a lot of times now. And at the same time, you know, there's the podcast right now about how people aren't getting paid. And, you know, there's no union. There's just absurd, you know, overtime and stuff like that isn't getting paid. And I think that I would agree that visual effects do not get the respect that they definitely deserve.
There's also something, too, that we've heard a lot this week. And it's not just we think about the shrinking deadlines in post and talking about the shrinking deadlines in visual effects, but that's actually really impacting pre-production as well.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about this previs. And we landed on Saturday and headed right off to Third Floor to see Chris Edwards, great guys over there at Third Floor. But what they're trying to be really interested in is making sure that the story still prevails in Hollywood. The things that are being cut out of the budget and timetables are this pre-production, the time to talk about what you're going to shoot, how you're going to execute it, how you're going to get things done. And that's a real danger as well. I mean, I think sometimes I was kind of thinking that from my perspective because we've done the stories on Effects Guide about deadlines and posts, but it's actually really hurting production as well, I think.
Well, I think the other thing, and we had an interview earlier today that'll be coming up in a few weeks' time with Scott Squires, who is just a legend. I mean, literally started on Close Encounters and was, of course, at ILM and done great films, including Dragonheart, which are my favorites. And the point he was raising when we were talking to him is that on set and in a lot of these areas, these people don't follow through to post. Like, their job, they actually get bonuses if they can get off set earlier. And so it's just, you've got to fix it in post because, well, for a start, you did last time. So what the heck are you going to do it this time?
Right.
And then secondly, like, you know what? I'm going to get a bonus if I finish. If I do the stuff that you need, then, you know, I'm not. So what do I care? And it's not quite that harsh, but it's a bit like that.
No, it's really interesting.
Now, having said that, I think that the animation companies are wielding a lot of power.
Oh, certainly. And especially now, I think that's going to hold true with stereoscopic and the way that's happening in theaters, because I think that's where the real strength of 3D and 3D environment for viewing audiences is in animation, and less so, in my opinion at least, in live action.
Yeah, I guess for me, Well, we saw some stuff. Where was that? At Kerner Optical, right?
Yeah.
When their stereo stuff. And you were saying that that was the moment that you went, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was my, you know, light bulb aha moment. And that's,
and by that, I'm
doing
not referring
cool
about 80s hairbands.
No, though I like aha. They're on my iPod.
Ice is good, too.
The Bond theme was fantastic.
I think that you look like one of the guys out of aha, actually.
But it was actually, Fluffy they one. Did this cool demonstration of extracting 3D in video games. And that was an experience that I just wanted to rip that controller out of his hands and play that game.
I'm going to drive
I'm
that
like,
game.
Can you imagine, you know, this is the first-person shooting games, the car driving, which is what we saw, even
we saw
Madden
football as well,
2000,
right?
You know, whatever, 2008
that was
right? Amazing. Yeah, sorry. Yes, football.
Okay.
But I was like, okay, that's really, in my opinion, going to drive. And that kind of does fit in with my feelings on animated films as well that we saw on Monday night at the Autodesk User Group meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all gaming, of Disney's slate and a lot of the other studios like Sony and stuff.
But you take that with gaming and the idea that how big the gaming industry is now, even compared to the movie industry, and just wielding tremendous clout. And that may happen as well with display devices and display technology.
Yeah, though I still say that I don't want to go on a date with my wife and put on funny glasses. I mean, I look ugly enough as it is, right? With the friggin' glasses on. I mean, you know, admittedly, she could have done much better, but, you know, whatever. So I just think that there's going to be a select group of people that want to do that. And
your eyes get tired.
So now, what about cool, geeky tech stuff?
Yeah, anyone else want to talk about that?
I've got some cool, geeky tech stuff if you want to talk about that.
All right, we like that.
I was looking at, you know, you talk about the visual effects of SIGGRAPH, and there's, you know, so many companies show up, but there's also the educational and applied technology section that you see. And one of the things that I found was this great quirky group of Japanese, I think, students that were doing a thing called Ants in the Pants. And what they were doing is taking up haptic sensors, and you wrap up a glove around your hand and you stick it on a table that's got ants and cockroaches running around, and it tracks...
Sorry, which bit of this is real and which is fake?
Yeah, explain which is...
I'm sorry, digital ants and cockroaches.
But real hands.
Okay. Your real hand wrapped up in a glove, a haptic sensor glove. And as you move it around, the ants and cockroaches run up your hand. And you feel it triggered up and down this haptic sensor glove. And it's like this great game. And they have this whole... And they've set it up like a video game, almost like with their great poster of creepy, exciting... pleasant. It's just so Japanese. It's great.
Yeah, we filmed a piece of that. I did it, and we filmed a piece on it. It was really interesting because it did freak you out. You definitely felt them traveling up your arm, then you shook them off, and they appeared back on the screen. It was very bizarre.
Is this another one of those things that they're going to tell me that the porn industry is going to use first?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. I, on the other hand, I went to the booth that experienced what it feels like to be stabbed. That
to
was
be
the
stabbed?
To stab. That was
okay.
It.
Can you
it wasn't,
why?
Not so much the stabbing.
Not so much with stabbing?
No. I mean,
kind of a dull thud.
Oh, yeah. In name.
Oh, Jeff Fisco representing from Syracuse, New York.
There you go. From New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, that's the thing and the thing. Yo, go, you know who.
Yeah, okay.
I get in a lot of trouble when I don't know the teams.
So. I have my mic off.
A Packer fan here, crying in his beer.
Cruel. We had a good time.
Anyone
at
else?
Game the other day.
All right, we'll talk to Xander.
All right, I'm Aaron Xander from LA. One of the cool things that I saw, and I actually saw it before I came to SIGGRAPH and didn't believe it was real, was this RAM raid. And what it is basically this raid system based entirely out of RAM or flash memory. So basically, their biggest issue right now is that 4x fiber channel is maxed out and they can't go any faster, which is, you know, one of those complaints that you hear all the time, that people can't get their drives reading fast. But I mean, when you have, it's relatively expensive, but for something like, you know, 4K plates, or if you're running the RAID to multiple flames running 4K plates, or, you know, you have the IMAX now, which is what 8K comes out to about
6.5.
You have like this RAID that can't keep up anymore. And you could have a couple of these boxes where you feed just the shots that are being worked on right now, and you could read that IMAX plate in stereo, even if you had, you know, two IMAX plates in stereo going through, and you'd
be
fine.
I couldn't agree with you more. I said a while ago that the thing I wanted most was them just to stuff enormous amounts of RAM in my machine. I wanted to have a machine that you could stack up, because, like, let's say that it maxed out, the machine was going to cost $50,000, right? Well, still a hell of a lot cheaper than what I used to pay for a flame. How you could put $250,000 worth of RAM in there for all I care if it was going to be able to give you the performance that you couldn't get any other way, and people will pay it.
yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things where they know that there's a market here, and, like, their big market right now is, like, the credit card companies who have, like, the fishbowls of just raids, where all it is just, they're basically, each raid system, they're just using the blades. They're not even really using the raids, and they're just using the RAM to RAM disk it. And they were telling me about this, that they came to this credit card company, and they wouldn't tell me which one, and they had the minimum hard drive you could get in each blade, and the maximum RAM, and they were just basically making a disk out of the RAM and running all their technology off of that, and they showed them their RAID, and they instantly bought enough to replace their entire farm.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's an absolutely awesome kind of angle.
It's completely expandable too. You know, it's like a normal RAID, but it runs RAM. So I think that's kind of where we're going to be going for speed, and I think it's interesting.
Can we just use old iPhones? Just collect them all? And...
Oh, speaking of iPhones, oh, God. There's an app we discovered today by Scott Squires, ex-ILM, I was talking about before. And so Scott actually has a thing that we just all bought straight away called, is it Squiggles? Squiggles? Is that right?
If you search in the App Store for Squires, you'll find
search
it.
And it's,
I Twittered
it's,
it. If
it is a layered paint program for your iPhone. Now, it does cost $4.99, but it's got Squires.
$4.99.
He's talking to Scott Squires, and Jeff and I are over on iPhones. I Twittered it, and then start downloading, and Jeff downloaded it, started playing.
But it's got text, it's got stamp tools, it's
you,
fun.
You downloaded it before I'd even finished the interview.
Yeah,
I had already taken a picture of you two talking about it and stamped your names on it and little flowers and confetti.
Yeah, it's just too screwed up.
It's fun. It's...
So what other amazingly cool technology... You know, I got one.
Okay.
The FX PhD logo on a coffee mug. And I'm not talking about round it now, I'm talking about on the latte. I want this. I would have every latte every day.
It's
not that I ever drink.
You'll be able to check this out if you're in PhD. It's in last week's, this week, last week.
This week's last week?
Last week, yeah.
Okay, cool. It's also, there's pictures of the Flickr pool.
And probably we'll throw in an FX Guy TV, I think, because it is kind of cool.
It's cool.
It's just one of those
inkjet, but
very useful technology.
So sure. Anybody else see anything cool?
Well, I think there's a new release of Maxon, Cinema 4D.
Excellent. And that actually has some kind of texturing, painting thingy, projection mappy thingy in it, right?
Yeah, we have something in it that is developed for Sony Studios, and it was called the Projection Man. It's just a management tool to make the whole process much easier and streamlined. And when we talk about studios, we talk also about Pixar, where we have now RenderMan in it, or Air, or 3D Light. And of course, I love to say that in FX PhD, we have, of course, the wonderful Tim Clapham, who teach all this stuff, hopefully in the future.
Yeah, we liked him. He's good.
Yeah, he's excellent. And he's also in a beta team, so he knows his stuff very well directly from the first place. And what have we else? We have a new GI system in it. We have a motion system now in the pipeline. So you put a character in, and it's like editing motion like in Final Cut Pro or any other non-linear editing system. Lots of stuff. I don't know, 200 new tutorials.
You're saying we's, just so people know who's speaking. Can tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are. And
who's me?
Who is that masked man?
I'm Sassy, normally called Dr. Sassmannshausen, or Dr. Sassy, just for short. I have written my doctoral work about animation. I have done 800 tutorials for the Pixel Corp to introduce them to 3D. And...
So they better be comping you, dude. 800, yeah. I'd be friggin' comping you.
I don't got it.
I'm sorry. I was just joking that they should buy you as much free alcohol as you want. That'd be free tutorials.
Thank you. No, and Cineversity is at the moment my main area. We have more than 1,000 tutorials there at the moment. I create at the moment a movie short with Cinema 4D. I have huge support in the industry from that, from PFTrack, for example, where I take a class in PFTrack with Victor. And the whole movie short is just to explain the whole feature film pipeline, from everything 3D tracking, rotoscoping, and so on. We'll be on Cineversity soon, too. That's me.
Yeah, I must admit that one of the things that I really like is also not just the cool technology on the floor, but the technical papers. And there was a really cool technical paper this afternoon, I think it was, about how Pixar was actually using Massive for the feature that came out in 3, which is the lanes. I don't know if anybody saw this paper, but you know, in Massive 3, John, they came out with lanes, which was a way of basically having traffic. Well, if anyone that's seen WALL-E, they'll know that all the robots in that were obviously going along lanes. If but it's a story point that they're in the lanes, and then I break out of the lanes, right? And what was interesting about it in 3.5 is that's been enhanced even further, which is cool. But what I thought was interesting is that the Pixar animators procedurally modeled the robots. So instead of actually just putting in robots in the traditional sense with the agents, they're actually fully procedurally animated, and that's pretty impressive. And certainly we're speaking to the founder, Simon, of Massive today, and he was himself blown away when he heard about that from Pixar. So those technical papers really are pretty...
And even some of the talks, Ed Catmull's talk the other day, the keynote address, that, I got to say, we went out and we were wandering around kind of looking for... to come get in there, and they closed access to the event. And so we went up to the overflow room, which, of course, was closed, right?
Well, full.
And full, yeah.
Both overflow rooms.
Actually, they went to the third overflow room,
and there
right?
were two people who came out and go, oh, my God, that was the most boring thing I've ever sat through in my life. It was like watching an animated thing with it was out of sync. And I'm like, yeah. And then I went downstairs and went to the Geek Lounge. Inappropriately enough, and started watching, and it was the best.
I thought it was the exact opposite of that.
But it was fascinating. I think that
were virgins. That's true, right? And B, they were gits, and C, they weren't Australians.
Jags, yeah. Jag-offs.
Dags, yeah. No, but seriously, the problem was that at that age, you don't know that the managing of the creative process is so important.
I was there with Michael Movies, another FXPC member. We were hanging out, and we just sat down, and we're like, are we watching the same thing they're watching? And it was fascinating because his insight into the world of creating films, I mean, he comes from his background, his computer background, and love for animated films, and just the way he manages people and manages Pixar, it was incredible.
Well, often those things are kind of esoteric, like the people are really important, and you kind of nod in like, well, that's a motherhood statement. And he would say that, then he said, let me drill down and give you an example of when this happened. And for example, he said, Toy Story 2 came along. Now, I think most of you guys would know that Toy Story 2 was a project that was going to go direct to video and then ended up going as a theatrical release. You may even know, in fact, that they started with what was called the B team, and then they decided that was bad for morale, and that they would, you know, make it a theatrical release and consider it an equal picture. What I certainly didn't know is that they actually fully restarted that picture with 9 months to go because it wasn't working. But here's the thing that's the kind of where it goes from being anecdotal to really insightful, is that when they restarted the project, it worked. Now, Ed Catmull was describing this. These are not my words, but he would say that every time they start a film, it sucks. And then it sucks a little less, and then it sucks a little less, until finally it doesn't suck so much, and then it actually is quite good. And his point was, on the B team, or the team that was the original team, it sucked, then it continued to suck, and then it never unsucked. And then they put the A team on it, and it sucked, didn't suck so much, and finally was quite good. And he said to himself, what was the difference? And you'd think that the difference would be that they had a different idea. But in fact, in both cases, it was the same plot line for the film. The problem was that, as he said, you need really good people, because the idea itself isn't nearly as important as the execution. And a good team with a bad idea will actually just fix it or replace it. A bad team with a good idea will just make a bad film. And he would just go into real detail about what it took to manage that team, how they had the review process, like all that stuff. That was just gold.
It was gold.
Great.
That was the thing about it. So, again, all that stuff, that's what makes Seagraph so great, I think, all that stuff together. Why it's such a great thing to come to and why we're enjoying this week.
Yes, and we're not over yet, are we?
No, we've got another day here, and then we're actually doing more filming this weekend for future stuff.
And we have a whole recording of a thing for next term starting Friday night and going to Sunday afternoon, which I can't announce on air.
Hopping on the red eye Sunday night when you hop back to Australia.
I don't think mine's so much the red eye as it is the red head. I like get on and just my head explodes for 14 hours.
I did get a text message that I got upgraded today, so at least I'll be flying back in comfort.
You suck.
Well, my flight's only 4 versus 14. So
yeah, so that would really help.
It would be really good for you.
Yeah, plus you actually fit in the chairs.
What? Sorry.
Thank you. We're here all week. Thank
I did not
much.
Bring sound effects. I'm sorry.
Well, we actually have to get to more things tonight because it is Seagraph.
Yes, and tonight is the Stan Winston memorial kind of night. I don't know if memorial is the right word, but remembering
tribute. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And actually, it's being hosted by Jody, who's is the editor of Cinefex, and that's happening down at the convention center. And there are studio nights happening every night this week here at the show. And last night, John Lasseter was doing a Pixar documentary, which was was particularly interesting, and there was obviously a lot of parties and stuff. But I would point out that it is something that you really can't go to everything. I mean, there's no way that you can turn up here and actually attend every event.
No, not at all. We pick and choose. You pick some, I pick some. Some we go together, some we want. But there's just too much to take in. But it's a blast. It's a fantastic time. Really enjoy it.
I would really like it if we could get more than 4 hours sleep as well. That would really help.
That'd be nice.
But last night, trying to finish the
day
written
one
story.
Recap, you were typing consistently as I was finishing. I wasn't doing much because it was just rendering, I guess. But
yeah, plus you were kind of sulking over that medal tally in China.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. USA. So, USA.
We only win in the swimming because we're an island. So, Jeff, what about you?
Well, this is the time of year I get to spend more time in downtown LA than I will until the next SIGGRAPH's here.
Which brings me to the next SIGGRAPH.
New Orleans.
Now, I come over here to talk to you about New Orleans because you are the embodiment of New Orleans, or should I say Norlands.
Norlands.
Did I say that right?
Norlands, yeah. I've been, my wife and I go to Jazz Fest every year for the past 14 years, so it's a little cooler the last weekend in April, first weekend in May, than it will be in August when it'll be about 99 degrees and 99% humidity, but I still love New Orleans and it'll be worth it. And
so do you think that we'll be going to New Orleans?
I can pretty much guarantee I will be, and I'm sure we will be.
So some advice for people that are thinking about going to New Orleans next year. For a start, it is actually, and on a serious note,
yes,
something that the SIGGRAPH wanted to do because obviously any injection of funds into post-Katrina is a really good thing.
You know, last time they did SIGGRAPH in New Orleans, I remember hearing a story that the SIGGRAPH always does a huge outreach program with the schools. And they actually couldn't do the outreach program in New Orleans because the schools were so backwards and so not equipped with computers that they couldn't do the normal programs that they did. But they still managed to do a lot of really cool stuff. So I'm anxious to see how that plays out and talk to them about that. Maybe we can do a podcast with them about some of that stuff when we get closer. But, you know, New Orleans is a great city, and the parties at SIGGRAPH in New Orleans are always outstanding because the talent and entertainment opportunities down there are just at every corner.
And while John is into his aha music and that young people stuff, you and I both like the blues, right? And New Orleans and the blues.
The blues, everything. I mean, there's so much good music down
there.
I know John likes boy bands and hair bands, but seriously, a bit of serious southern blues is my idea of a good time. That with a margarita and a...
Everything. We'll have some good... We'll eat well. We need to build our schedule a little differently for New Orleans. You need to...
Do we have a favorite restaurant in New Orleans?
Oh, we do have a favorite restaurant in New Orleans.
Which is?
Yes. Giacomo's by the Maple Leaf.
Okay.
For
and I want one of those...
Familiar with that?
Those rolls that they have with...
Beignets?
Sorry?
A beignet, maybe?
That's the one.
From Café
Du Monde? I don't know how to say it, but I want one of those.
Yes.
Head down to Café Du Monde.
Yes, breakfast in the morning.
Yep.
It'll be nice.
It'll be tasty.
Yes.
So we just want to do a big shout-out to everybody that came along for tonight. We want to say thank you for coming. And, you know, as we say in Australia, leave your money on the fridge. So thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate it. See you later. And until next time, John. That's where you do the Segway thing, right? You're just paying attention to the gorgeous sunset.
I can't hear you.
I know.
Over
I just want to stop and take pictures.
It's a pretty killer
sunset. It is a pretty killer sunset.
I hope that one of you guys has a camera and is vlogging this.
I think I've already tumbled it.
The internets. That's good.
The internets.
Put it on the internets.
Exactly. Someone really needs to do that. No. But anyway, thanks everyone for joining and us showing up tonight, because it really is one of the things I like a lot about FXPHD. And that's
it's all about the community.
Yeah. Meeting people, building community. Networking throughout, that's really one of my favorite aspects about the site.
Plus, I'm an only child, so I don't think anyone's ever going to turn up to any parties we have, so I'm always sulking about 4 o'clock.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We're going to have more FX Guide TV apps coming out this week. We've got a bunch in the pipeline. We've just been so busy actually going out and interviewing people that it's been tough to get them together. We've got two almost done now, and then more coming out later in the week, so check for those over at FX Guide. So until next time, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
I'm Mike Seymour, and you are...
Jeff Huser, and we're out. Let's drink.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide. Thank you.